This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network on a Friday as we welcome you in. Of course, a busy day, busy time of the year. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. We say hi to the boys there, downtown Las Vegas, Fremont Street, Bar Canada at the D. Amal Shaw, of course, Dustin Sweetelson got plenty to do coming off Thursday night with a 20-16 winner. A sharp money parlay as the Steelers cover and the under does cash. We'll get into that. I know the big guy wants to look at the coach of the year market coming off of it. NBA, looks like we've got the in-season tournament. Just getting going right away there. NBA, NHL, two games on the ice. Got some good college football tonight as well. Of course, it is a Friday, so we'll run the board here on Sharp Money. We're going to have Scott Spreitzer along for the ride to run the board later in the show, professional handicapper, a new teammate here at VSiN, Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN betting analyst, is going to join coming up in just a bit. He's got a bunch of best bets for the weekend. Chris Farley, professional handicapper, is going to join as well. I know the boys have a ton in college football. Week 10, I've got a little surprise for you guys coming up as far as college football in Week 10 and where we stand so far on November 3rd. But the pleasantries are over. Let's go to the boys. I heard there is a video poker tournament going on right next to you guys, so should be exciting to keep note of as the show progresses. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. $20,000 on the line here for the first prize, I believe, overall. So it should be a little bit louder than it normally is behind us. You can already tell by the number of people. But maybe they're going to have a sweat like we did with Will Levis in the final 20 yards of that game last night. The side and total potentially in peril there.
Yep, 100%. Big guy, I don't know if you're planning on getting involved in the tournament going on next to you, but I know that I'll be hearing complaining during the break.
No, but on this side of the casino, there will be a strip poker tournament going on, and the prize is me naked.
That is, it's a lucky Friday at the D. There's no doubt about that. Okay, so plenty to do. Yeah, Amal mentioned it. There was a late drive, Will Levis and the boys, the Titans. It was an interesting game. It was an interesting game just because there was a lot in front of us and what to trust as far as the quarterback position. And Amal, Dustin, you two feel free to do whatever you want because we all crushed Will Levis coming out of Kentucky. Maybe he didn't get the coaching, but I'm willing to say I'm completely wrong. The guy is completely legit. I've seen plenty. I don't need to see one more snap. It's effortless. Obviously, the size and arm strength, that was never really an issue. Holding onto the ball too long and maybe a little inaccuracy was the issue at Kentucky. Also, you're getting coached by one of the donk stoops, so you're probably not getting the best offensive coaching at Kentucky. But yesterday, Kenny Pickett, I know he engineered the 11-play 92-yard drive, Deontay Johnson with the game winner. Kenny Pickett is so mid. I would be so frustrated if I was a Steeler. 19 of 30, 160, a Steeler fan, 5.3 yards per attempt, missed a ton of throws. And then conversely, the Titans. And if you're a Titan fan, I think you're pretty excited. He was pressured 15 times, Will Levis, in the game last night, the worst offensive line in football, and still got it done. Took the Titans into the half, 13-10 lead. Of course, we mentioned the end zone pick to Quan Alexander, but I think the big takeaway from last night, one, the Steelers are 5-3 with, as Dustin said, a trash roster. And two, I think the Titans should feel pretty good about what they have at the quarterback position. Again, you two do what you want with the information. We always disagree on quarterbacks, but I'm high on Will Levis. I was wrong. That's my position here, Amal Shaw.
Well, first of all, I was completely wrong. I don't know if there's a quarterback I can remember in two games that has proven me completely wrong. And it's an indictment of James Franklin and Mark Stoops, his former head coaches at Penn State and Kentucky. But I got to tell you, Patrick, I'll take it one step further. Obviously, you know I'm high on CJ Stroud, being biased towards him because he went to Ohio State and he's played well. But from what I've seen out of Will Levis in the first 2 weeks, I don't know why we're not getting bets down on him for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, to me, I know it's only a small sample size, but Tennessee seems like a player. That's a game last night. You're flying back to Nashville and you're thinking you let one get away. What a missed opportunity. And then I was thinking big picture in the AFC South. Is any division right now in football better setup with young quarterback talent for all four of their teams than Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Houston, and now the Tennessee Titans with Will Levis. You've got Trevor Lawrence, first overall pick. You've got C.J. Stroud, the second overall pick. Anthony Richardson, what was he, fifth, I believe, if I'm not mistaken? Fifth or fourth to Indianapolis. And then you've got Will Levis, a guy who went 33rd overall, but probably should have been a first rounder. Maybe the interviews. Richardson went fourth. Will Levis, maybe the interviews, maybe the tape, which when you watched him at Kentucky, he turned the ball over in critical times. And I'm not just talking about interceptions, but you're absolutely right, Patrick. You watched 3-4 throws, his ability to navigate the pocket despite getting sacked four times, Watt and Highsmith committing tons of pressures. It was really a remarkable job what he was able to do. And it felt like, to me, just from my perspective, Henry and that offense were a little bit reinvigorated with the ability that we saw out of Will Levis. I didn't see Tannehill making tons of these types of plays. And we know Malik Willis has no shot at doing it.
No, it's well put. And I think if this was second year, you know, midway through, and he had that game, we'd be like, okay, he's on the right trajectory. Yeah. It was his second start against, you mentioned, T.J. Watt and Highsmith, who are just absolute studs. Again, pressured 15 times, never seemed rattled. He wasn't perfect. In fact, he was 22 of 39, 262. He did have the pick to end the game. So it's not like we're going crazy. This is where you kind of trust your eyes, big guy. And Amal said it well. It's like, again, all I would say after two starts from Will Levis is there's got to be excitement amongst the fan base. Like, you have something here. It's effortless. He seems in control. There's something to work on, and you're going to get a big upgrade, or it's supposedly, or you should get a big upgrade from the Kentucky coaching he got to this Titan coaching in the NFL. And if he does get that prototypical size, everything's there for Levis.
Guys, Will Levis can freaking sling it. That's all I think watching him. He can chuck the football, and he's athletic enough to make plays and extend plays with his legs. He's very calm in the pocket. He was a rookie. Think about this. He's a rookie in his second start on a short week on the road in Pittsburgh, and he looked cool as a cucumber. That guy was so calm back there. Look, the efficiency's not quite there yet, but that's okay. He gives them such a dynamic element through the air that they were lacking with Ryan Tannehill. It opens things up, and if they're ever ahead in games, that should allow for Derrick Henry to do more dirty work. It's just the way things played out later in the game that he wasn't able to run it quite as much. I just can't believe this guy couldn't beat out Sean Clifford. Like, I'm still blown away by that. And I think there's something we need to factor into how we project quarterbacks going forward. A lot of times, I know Amal doesn't like this, people will say, like, a quarterback from Ohio State or Alabama, it's tough to project them simply because when they go to the NFL, sometimes they have less talent to work with than they had in college compared to their opponents. With someone like Will Levis, apparently Kentucky was so anemic on offense last year and the weapons were just so bad that we were unable to project how good he could be in the pros because he's proving everyone wrong.
You're not wrong in any of what you said there. I mean, a couple of years ago, you go back and Wandale Robinson, who's with the Giants, was at Kentucky with him. The Nebraska transfer really liked him when he was at UK. But to me, I got to tell you, Patrick, what stood out to me last night about him. Forget the performance. When they got that football down 20-16, I actually thought it was, not saying it was like a Joe Burrow. You know, when Joe Burrow or Mahomes has the ball, you genuinely believe they're going to go right down the field and they're going to score. But normally speaking, with an inexperienced quarterback or a Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm like, yo, this one's in the bank and earning interest. This thing is over. Don't worry about it. They're not going. I was like, yo, this dude's about to take it down and get seven. He's going to beat me on the Steelers play right here, and he's going to knock out the under.
I totally agree. I'm genuinely excited to see what he turns into.
He's got a little cowboy in him.
There's just a poise. There's a competence. And you know what the interesting thing is? It's not like Pickett's fine. It's like he can start, but there was a big feel of the difference between the two, right? Like, Pickett just engineered another comeback win. Like, there's nothing wrong with that 95-yard 11-play drive. He threw the touchdown pass. The pass was accurate. It's just, it feels different when you're watching him. He's to temperaments there for Pickett. You just are left underwhelmed. Whereas, as you said, Amal, like there was expectations already in start number two and his first start on the road for Levis. There's a different feel there with the quarterbacks. A
couple things you mentioned about Pickett. He's got the second most winning drives in the fourth quarter in overtime since last year, along with Kirk Cousins has got him by 1-9-8, but it's impressive. Hit that great throw to Deontay Johnson on the right sideline, which really put Pittsburgh in position to be able to get that victory. But I'm with you. Kenny Pickett struggles for about 3.5 quarters. I don't need that out of my quarterback. I need somebody who's consistent. If I didn't tell anybody last night that Will Levis is playing his second start in the National Football League, nobody would believe it. Because watching him, there was not a single part of me that goes, that guy's a rookie in his second football game being played in 5 days.
Yep. I think that's it. Yeah, it was an interesting game because if you have quarterback questions or prospects playing the position, even if the offenses aren't great, at least you have something to focus on. And that's what I felt like. I was entertained by a big guy, 20-16 winner for the Steelers.
So is Mike Tomlin. Here's what he had to say about his quarterback playing injured on a short week.
You know, nothing that he does from an intangible perspective or a toughness perspective surprises me. I think that we're all really comfortable about those qualities in him and, you know, his desire to rise up big for us in moments and be significant down the stretch. Can't say enough about it.
Here's what you don't want to be described as: somebody that has wonderful intangibles and toughness. Like, those are add-ons. Those are ancillary products. Like, those are things that attributes you want people to say after the remarkable arm strength, the insane instincts, the skill, the prototypical size, the cannon. And by the way, he has remarkable toughness and just the intangibles. When people start talking about intangibles, you start looking for another job because you're not an expert at your craft. That's Kenny Pickett. We've got Coach of the Year odds coming back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We're going to be joined by NFL handicapper, pro, and friend of the show, Chris Farley. You can find Farley on Twitter. We were just reading some good tweets at Farley Bets. Also, Laying the Points podcast, and also writes over at sportswagers.ca. As we say hi to Chris and bring the boys in, I wanted to throw something at you guys because we talked about this with Fezzik, and there's always going to be a tax, a premium when you're watching a primetime game, a standalone game, when you go to the half on those totals. Now, think about it this way. We went to the half last night, 13-10. Amal, I said this is my best bet of the night even before they posted it because my assumption was it was going to be inflated. Do you know what the Pittsburgh Steeler Tennessee Titan halftime total was last night?
I'm going to say 19.5.
They set it at 20. Farley, that is your 19.5 is closer to where it should be. I wrote down it should be 17.5. Right? I believe the first half total was right around 17.5. We go with 23 combined points into the half. Again, they posted it at 20. That's an underplay right there, Farley.
Absolutely. Wow. This is a great topic that you brought up because that's so true. And you can find that all the time in the NBA too, right? If some of these like quarters start off really fast paced and you know that you have two good defenses or two good teams that could slow down offensively even, right? You can constantly attack those inflated live totals and it's usually going to be too high, right? Because we love overs, right? The sports books know that. They know that there's a lot of common Joes betting those live numbers. So they don't have to be as sharp. That's a great point. Yeah. There's a lot of overreactions on those live totals for sure.
Yeah. And look at it.
Yeah. And it's 13 points scored, Amal. I'm not saying you're going to cash every time, but again, you got 13 points scored in the second half last night and the total was 20. That's quite a chasm there.
No, no question about it. Just look at it from this perspective. You mentioned in the first half, we wound up with 23 points. So if you make the second half total 20, now the game total is 43. The original game line was 37. In a game that you expected to be lower scoring to begin with, what a great opportunity. What a far better number. And look, doesn't mean, and Patrick, you brought up a great point. It doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to play out that way over the long haul. But Chris is absolutely right. Chris, I'm going to tell you right now, I love NBA in-game and second halves. That's what I look for. Are games where you have outliers, a team shooting 60%, they're down by a certain percentage. I mentioned this the other night to Dustin. The Clippers are playing against Orlando. The Tragic are shooting like 50%, and the Clippers are at 31%. They're down three at the break. I'm like, are you kidding me? 5.5 for the second half? This is a joke. And the Clippers end up outscoring them by, I don't know, 20 points in the second half. But that's exactly, Patrick, you're right. Just add it to the original number, and now you've got a six-point differential. If I tell you before the game you're getting 43 on this total as opposed to 36, you're taking it all day.
Absolutely. And Farley, as far as Chris Farley, professional capper joining us, I've got a great tweet that I want to read from you. But to Amal's point in NBA betting, is that, have you started to get into a rhythm? I know you focus a lot during this time of the year on the NFL, but have you started already with the NBA capping hardcore?
Not hardcore. We're even so far, but I am really trying to be very judicious about the games that I pick, and we're seeing it already, right? Like this happened last season too. And I had way too much exposure last season, which, you know, trying to learn these lessons over time, especially when the NFL season is going on, right? And I'm so focused on it, but not only are these rosters, right? Like so many of them are so different, right? So there's still some natural norming that needs to happen on some of these teams, but odds makers are way off. I mean, the line movement, I mean, sharp money, whatever you want to, like, where these lines are moving, what these lines are suggesting have not been very accurate. And it just feels like we're all, even odds makers, right? We're all getting to the point where we're just trying to figure out who these teams are. We know some of these teams already. Teams like the Kings, the Nuggets, you know, they're still basically the same rosters, right? So they can be a little more predictable. But my goodness, right? You're seeing teams like the Grizzlies really struggle. So I would just be really cautious and really light with your exposure in the NBA. I would say until January, you know, that second half of the season starts to kick in. These teams have a good 2-3 months together. And there's also not the distraction of NFL football.
I think bettors can take something away from this message at Farley Bet. So I'm going to read the tweet and just ask you to expound, Chris. When I do my best handicapping, again, this is at Farley Bets, I write a lot and in an objective way, stating facts, comparing notes, recognizing storylines and angles and intangible difference makers. And the answer starts showing up. It's not about me. It's about holistic evaluation, all the info. So you continue. But I really like that pragmatic approach. Can you explain what you mean by that message?
Well, I'll put it this way, and I'm not comparing myself to John Lennon, okay? But John Lennon once said that when he was writing music, he's not really doing anything, right? Like he's just kind of, he's skilled, he's talented, sure, but he's just open to what's happening. And I think that's how we should, especially in NFL handicapping, just start to write stuff. Like just start to accumulate information, just start to piece the puzzle together. It just happened to me earlier today, right? I mean, I had an assignment to write up the Chiefs and the Dolphins. You know, thought that I was going to go with the Chiefs, you know, that whole Sunday morning overseas, you know, it could just be a really crazy travel spot, right? But instead, I came out really liking the under. And you know, not that you have to go with the under just because I said that, but as you fork through all the different elements, and there are so many elements week to week, it's such a week to week league, right? Teams are responding off of what just happened last week. You have the sum total of what they've done. Maybe some games matter than others. And as you write that, it kind of comes out. So I would say, you know, approach it as objectively as possible, because really what that's trying to do is eliminate the confirmation bias, right? Because we all have confirmation bias inside of us. We all have gut instincts. Some of them are wrong. Some of them are right. If you write it out as best you can, even if it's in really long form, the answer starts showing up.
Love that breakdown and how you kind of explain some of the things that materialize as you start going through the process. Patrick, one of the things I love about doing the show is, for example, we bring somebody like Chris on, and Spritzer's coming on later on. He's got a different perspective on a bet, and I'm going to go specifically into this one. Chris, you like the Bengals on Sunday. I'm going to tell you right now, I played the Bengals last week on the look-ahead line plus one. I didn't understand this number, and to me, I'm like, you kidding me? I'm getting Mr. Turnover himself, Josh Allen, coming to the jungle here. And so I don't get it. Hey, break down a little bit why you're on this side and just maybe help me explain, because I'm still trying to figure this out, why this number has not been sitting at three the whole time.
Yeah, I don't understand why either. You know, we'll start with the Bills, right? The Bills just haven't looked very good. I mean, I'm not very impressed by them beating the Bucs. I mean, really barely eking by the Bucs. They played well. Josh Allen played well, but they didn't cover in that game. They should have lost against the Giants. You know, they went overseas. They really stumbled over there. Obviously got their butts whipped by the Patriots recently. And we've seen this from the Bengals before, right? Like, I don't think this is a joke. The Bengals do this every single year now. This is going on the third year in a row. What a statement up in San Francisco. Not only was Joe Burrow 28 of 32, right? That's like 88%, showing that elusive nature that he's had before that can make a really big difference. Their defense stepping up and making plays. And their defense, if you notice, plays so much better when Joe Burrow and that offense is operational in the way that it should be, right? Because then they could play free. They could play their style of football. In the jungle, this is a Bengals team who looked like they were going to whoop the Bills, you know what, last year, you know, prior to the whole situation with Hamlin. And this is the time of year where I think the Bengals just can really turn it on. They have a dynamic against these teams too, right? Like the Chiefs, they were unbeatable against the Chiefs until last year in the AFC Championship game. Obviously, what happened, you know, a questionable call there at the end of that game. But the Bengals know how to step up in these situations. Bill's defense still very injured. I just trust the Bengals. And I think, you know, we just have to trust what we've seen from them so far until they show us something different. Beating San Francisco after San Francisco has lost two games in a row. An operation as bunned up as that was extremely impressive. I think Burrow is clearly back. The Bengals are clearly back. I could not look at the Bills in this spot.
Love it. We were just discussing the interim boost, right, with the new head coach for at least a week. Antonio Pierce in with the Raiders, a little different energy. You've got the Raiders laying two, Chris, with the Giants coming to town.
Yeah, you know, and this obviously isn't like an automatic thing, right? Just because a coach gets fired doesn't mean that you automatically bet on that team, right? There's some mixed results with things like that, but they are facing the Giants, my New York Giants. I'm a fan. And unfortunately, I can tell you, right? I mean, as we can all see plainly on the screen, Daniel Jones is coming back this week, and I don't think that's a good thing for the Giants. I mean, this guy, two touchdowns, six interceptions. Tyrod Taylor was stretching the field for them in a way that Daniel Jones did not when he was playing. And now the Raiders have this situation, right, where all the receivers are coming out. Devontae Adams is already saying that he wants to run through a wall for this guy. Hunter Renfro, right, is saying that now they don't have to walk on eggshells anymore. Clearly, Josh McDaniels, not fit to be a head coach. Hopefully, we know that now. You know, just thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room, I think. Now you got a football guy, Antonio Pierce, former New York Giants linebacker and Super Bowl winner. There in the interim only, but still, right? I mean, this is a big spot for the Raiders. It feels like a bigger game for the Raiders. Like, this game really matters to them. They're excited about the change. And here come the Giants flying across the country with a 2-6 record. And the Giants know they're not going anywhere this season, right? They're starting to sell some of their players. Leonard Williams is gone. This is not a good situation for the Giants. The Raiders probably don't have a lot to play for this season either, but it is a confluence of factors that I really like. And I think Max Crosby could have five sacks in this game.
Let's do this. Let's, Farley, if you can, hold on. We'll have you on for another segment because you have some words of advice for survivor contestants with a tough week coming up. Also, how to handicap coaching decisions and use that as part of your arsenal. And you've got to play in that Seahawk game as well. So we'll continue with Chris Farley, professional handicapper here on Sharp Money. So Farley says he's John Lennon. So Dustin, that makes you Ringo. I'll be George Harrison, and Amal Shaw, of course, you look exactly like Paul McCartney. That's the Beatles, the four of us right here on a Friday. Sharp Money.
is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, check out the betting splits over at vsin.com. You get money and bets for every game, updated every 5 minutes straight from DraftKings. Today's games and future events as well, by far our most popular tool when you become a pro. The betting splits, it's vsin.com. Okay, Sharp Money on a Friday. We're going to run the board with professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer and the final hour, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. But right now, excited, a welcomed addition to vsin, Tyler Shoemaker joins us, VSIN betting analyst. You can see a bunch of Tyler's work over at VSIN.com. Does a great job. Also at T-Shoe Index on Twitter. It's a pleasure to meet you, Tyler, and nice to have you on the program. Let's start here. I'm going to go to an easy one. And, you know, I was thinking about this Missouri-Georgia game because wasn't it last year when Mizzou, who finished, I think, with what, 6 wins last year, put a scare into Georgia at Mizzou last year, Georgia the comeback and win. And now we transfer. It's a 7-1 Missouri team, Tyler, down to Athens. DraftKings is setting 15 right now. You can find a 15.5 in the market and 55.5 on the total. Let's start there.
Yeah, I really like this Missouri team. I bet Missouri plus 15.5. I projected Georgia minus 11. Like you said, Missouri put a big scare in Georgia last year at Missouri. You know, obviously I would like it more if it was there, but even going between the hedges in Athens, I think they're going to be able to keep this close. Georgia, they've had really high highs this season, you know, against Kentucky and against Florida, but then they've had some low lows and just haven't quite looked the dominant form that we've seen from them the last couple of years. So I'm not really sure what to expect out of Georgia from week to week, but I think Missouri has been pretty consistently good, particularly with their offense, with quarterback Cook and the receivers. I really like their offense.
Yeah, Patrick, I like Tyler's point on this one. And I'll tell you what, if Brady Cook plays well, he's got 15 touchdowns, 3 INTs. He might enter that Heisman conversation if they go on the road between the hedges and win this game. Whether they do it or not remains to be seen. You just pay attention to him. I'm not saying he's going to win, but, you know, guys always seem to pop up with big road wins.
Yep. Go ahead, Molly. You want to set him up on one?
Yeah, I was going to say Kansas State on the road, Tyler, catching 4.5 down. Line's down to 3.5 in Austin. Is this simply a play for you against Malik Murphy and this Texas offense, or is this a play more on Kansas State?
I like Kansas State. My numbers have been high on Kansas State all season. I project this game Texas minus 2.5, and that's, you know, with no manual adjustment for Malik Murphy starting instead of Quinn Ewers. So obviously when you factor that in, I personally would think Ewers is worth about 4.5 points to the spread. So that definitely put me on Kansas State here. But I do like Kansas State. My numbers have been on them from the preseason on. They let me down when they lost to Missouri. I had them in that game, but they've been high in my numbers all season.
Okay, let's go. Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN betting analyst, joins us here, Sharp Money. And Bedlam's going away. That's kind of a bummer. They were talking about 100 years of history with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, but we've got one more ride here, Tyler. Right now, Oklahoma's laying 6, but I think you're focused on the total here of 62.
Yeah, I made a play on the under here. I don't want to touch the side. You know, this is a game where a lot of times people ask me, well, do you ever bet against your numbers? And I don't ever bet against my numbers, but if my numbers and my head are telling me two different things, it's a stay away. So on the side, I'm staying away because my numbers love Oklahoma. They've been super high on Oklahoma all season, but Oklahoma State's surging. I think these teams are kind of trending in opposite directions right now. So I don't want anything to do with the side, but I am going to play the under 62 here.
When you look at this team right now in Jacksonville State, I know it's not a popular play for a lot of people, but you seem to be on them, and I know Dustin's been a big fan of them. Tell me what you like about them. They're catching 15.5 this weekend.
Yeah. I wrote about this at VSiN.com earlier this week in my Best Bets article. I actually only project South Carolina as a point favorite here. I've got, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, South Carolina's got the advantage. They're number 61 of my numbers, whereas Jacksonville State's number 80. But on the defensive side, Jacksonville State's number 53 and South Carolina's number 88. So I think Jacksonville State can keep it close here. You know, I think when you have these kind of late season non-conference games against a non-Power 5 team, I think that tends to be kind of a sleepy spot for these particularly an SEC type team where they feel like they can maybe catch their breath a little bit, you know, as they head down the stretch of conference play. And I think Jacksonville State might be able to get them here.
While you're not, Tyler, while you're not in Columbia, which is where South Carolina is, you are in the great state of South Carolina. They're near Greenville. Can you tell me what you're hearing in state about my guy, Shane Beamer? Because I guess you'd say the bloom is off the rose, right? With his weird post-game reactions to these losses and underwhelming season.
Well, as weird as he's been, I think Dabo actually took the cake this week on his call-in show going after, you know, Tyler from Spartanburg. I actually tweeted and joked that, you know, I was the Tyler that called in. But I'm more in Clemson territory here, so I get more feedback on the Clemson side of things. But I do think Gamecock fans are, you know, they had every reason to be excited. He's an energetic guy. But yeah, I'm with you. I think. It's probably wearing a little thin right now because all that energy and everything is great when you're winning football games, but they haven't been particularly sharp either, you know, so it's not like they're losing in a fluky kind of way. They're getting beat and Gamecock fans don't take kindly to that for sure.
No, we don't. Houston Baylor. Let's go here because I think you bet Houston at 4 and this has been pushed down to that key number of 3 with Baylor laying at hosting Houston.
Yeah, I would still take Houston at 3 here. I bet it at 4 earlier in the week. I would still take it at 3. I think they're going to win the game. You know, Baylor was a team coming in. I think people had pretty high expectations for them, you know, potentially contending for what was deemed kind of a wide open Big 12 outside of Texas. And that just has not been the case. They've been pretty bad. Baylor's actually outside the top 100 on both offense and defense in my numbers. So my numbers are not a fan of Baylor at all. So I'm going to take the points here with Houston, and I think they'll win outright.
Tyler, I want to go to a game that's really intriguing to me, and I'm glad you're on this game. Curious to see your breakdown on this. Virginia Tech taking on Louisville in Louisville, catching 9.5 to 10 in this game. Brent Pry's team had gotten off to a slow start, but things seem to be picking up for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it seemed to coincide with the quarterback change. They started the season with Grant Wells, the Marshall transfer. And he kind of got hurt and forced their hand to go to the backup drones. And since he's been in, their offense has taken a step up here. I really like this spot here for Virginia Tech. I think pretty much everybody's on Louisville in this spot. Kind of one of those lines that seems curious to the casual fan, but I really like Virginia Tech here getting 10. I think coming down below that key number of 10 to 9.5 at most spots now. But I bet it at 10. I would still take it at 9.5.
Let's go Pac-12. Tyler Shoemaker joining us here. T-Shoe Index on Twitter. You can check out the plays over at VSiN.com. A welcome addition here, of course, as a betting analyst. Two teams, Pac-12, UCLA. So UCLA is on the road at Arizona. Arizona's been one of those good surprise teams this year. And Tyler, you've got UCLA laying 2.5 on the road and 50.5 on the total.
Yeah, I like Arizona here. I played this. Arizona's been kind of a scrappy team all season. They had the overtime loss earlier in the season. I think they're just a team. One, they play late at night most of the time, and I know UCLA does sometimes too. But you'll occasionally catch UCLA more of an evening spot on, you know, Eastern time. So I don't think a lot of people are really familiar with Arizona and what they've been able to do this year, but. I mean, Jed Fish is probably not long for the desert with the way he's coaching right now. I expect him to get a bigger job here in the next year or two.
Yeah, agree with you on Jed Fish. He's done a tremendous job. Want to go to a game of the American Conference. This one at Dowdy-Ficklin, East Carolina hosting Tulane, and you're on a total in this game.
Yeah, I like the under here in this spot. I considered playing the Pirates here, getting 17 against Tulane, but I ended up going with the total. I don't quite trust the East Carolina offense to do enough to cover the number, but that led me to the under. So I'm taking the under 45.5 here in this game.
Patrick, real quick, to Tyler's point on ECU's offense, in 5 of their 7 games this year against Division I competition, they've scored less than 17 points.
Yep, 100%. So we had the college. We just got a minute here, Tyler. We had the college football. They released their first rankings. The committee did. I'm going to put you on the spot. Your top 5, not necessarily what you think, you know, based on power, strength, schedule, all that, just your top 5, the best 5 teams you've seen this year.
Yeah, I didn't really have a too much of a problem with the committee rankings. I do my own. So obviously my main focus is power ratings, but I also do a resume style ranking, which had Ohio State number one. I had Florida State number two, Michigan number three, Washington number four, and I actually had Alabama number five. So really my only gripe with the committee was having Georgia as high as they did, because there's not a single metric that I look at or value that says that Georgia should have been in the top four. You know, without saying the words defending national champions, I don't know that there was quite a justification for that.
Beautiful. Awesome. We'd love to hear that. Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN betting analyst at T-Shoe Index. You can go check out the plays for this weekend over at T-Shoe Index and also VSiN.com. Tyler, pleasure to meet you. Have fun with the kids and enjoy the football this weekend, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Tyler Shoemaker, we come back a little Week 10 primer in college football.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, quick break to talk about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. You can find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. As a warning, this product does contain nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. We welcome you back here on Sharp Money on a Friday. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We're going to run the board, and doing so, professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer joins us usually on a Wednesday. Nice enough to shift to Friday this week. Doc Sports, docsports.com for all your handicapping needs. And Scott, at Scott Wins with two T's on Twitter. And over at Doc Sports this weekend, you've got something pretty cool going on, Scott. It's us against the spread.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. Good to be on with you guys. And, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, we watch these newsletters that come out every week, and we thought it would be cool to start this football season where it would be kind of like a video slash audio newsletter. And the cool thing about doing it that way is we don't have to get it to a printer. We don't have to send it to mass emails on a Monday night to get it by a Tuesday. So we get all the updated injury info that we're able to give out every single week. We do the college show on Thursday, the NFL show on Fridays, and we cover every single NFL game on and Monday Night Football and about 9 or 10 college football games. So I've managed to be able to go 66-42 thus far. Wow. On this show. It's a pay-per-view show. It's basically $20 a month, $19.99 a month. And it's over at usagainstthespread.docsports.com. But enjoy it, because it really is an electronic newsletter, if you will.
66-42? Hell yeah, Scott. Nice little run. Us against the spread. Go check it out at Doc Sports. Okay, boys, we know how this works. Amal, I'll just give a couple of plays here from Spreitzer College Football, then we'll get to running the board NFL style. And you can't quit your home state there, Nebraska. You're going to lay the three with Nebraska at Michigan State and East Lansing this weekend, Scott.
Yeah, I like the job Matt Rhule's done. And, you know, over the course of his college football head coaching career, he's done extremely well against the spread, and including 30-13 on the road. He's 20-7 against the number in November games. His teams just tend to get better as the season progresses. And so as far as Michigan State, we might have mentioned this on the Wednesday shows way back when the Mel Tucker scandal surfaced. And I said, okay, that's it. Rest of the season, I'm either playing against Michigan State or I'm staying away from the game. I've played against them three times. We've cashed all three. They're 0-6 since the scandal broke, 1-5 against the spread, and five of the six losses came by an average of 26 points per game. The thing is their offense, 11 points per game during the skid. And if you look at the numbers over those six games, they're averaging 98 yards rushing per game on just over three per carry, 55% passing, about 188 passing yards per game on just over 5 yards per pass, 4 touchdowns, 9 picks. So Nebraska and Tony White, you know, they got this 335 defense that's stopping everybody but Michigan on their schedule, one of the top defenses in the country. And I do believe that the Spartans are going to wilt again. I like Nebraska to win this game. The line's 3. I think they win by 7 to 10 points. Won't be pretty. I think it'll be like a 23-13 type of game.
Patrick, I love this play against Michigan State here. The only positive I can say about Sparty is they got a young quarterback out of Westland, Oregon named Sam Levitt. This kid's pretty good. He's going to be a guy that Michigan State builds with in the future. But Scott's absolutely right. Michigan State, you saw them against Minnesota, Scott. They were horrific offensively. They couldn't do much. The Gophers actually shot themselves in the foot with some opportunities early on in this game. Big red here on a cheap number.
You know what's good also, guys, real quick? I was going to say, there's a pro scout out there who I caught this on one of the national radio shows in the last few days, and he goes around and he's looking for talent, obviously, to be drafted in the NFL or signed as free agents. And he said out of all the schools that he's been to this year, the top two hardest practicing football programs that he's seen, the Georgia Bulldogs and the Nebraska Cornhuskers. As a Nebraska fan, it's good to see that Matt Rhule's getting tough on his team, unlike what happened with Scott Frost.
Yeah, no doubt. They needed a change in culture after Frost. That was chilly, to say the least. I'll see my way out. Okay. Boston College, you actually found a three. It's been bet down to 2.5 at Syracuse here. You're taking a three with BC.
Yeah, I grabbed the three a couple of days ago. And the thing about this Syracuse team, I just mentioned Tony White moving to Nebraska as DC. He was the DC at Syracuse and installed that 335 defense that they're now using in Lincoln. And so what do? They go out and they get the guy who kind of founded it, which was Rocky Long, to coach still a 335 defense at the Cuse, but it's not been the same. The results have not been anywhere close to what Tony White was producing. And, you know, BC's won four in a row. They should find consistent success tonight, 14th ranked rushing offense. They average over 211 yards per game on the ground. Yet if you look at the Orange, these losses that they've had now, four in a row, I mean, they're all by big margins. The shortest margin was 17. The other three were by 28 or more. So it's a team that can't really stop anyone. They're 109th against the pass. They're bad against the run. I think BC goes in there and gets the outright win, although I did grab the three, and as you mentioned, it is down to 2.5. Real quick note on that. I think you were off 1 week, Patrick, and I was discussing with Amal and Dustin about don't buy half a point. If you want to go back about 30 plus years, which myself and a good buddy of mine with a big long database, we went back and looked and we saw that over the last 30 plus years, the average final score is over 12 points away from the point spread in college football. And with books charging more to buy a half a point, it's just a situation where you're really devaluing your bet if you do. Hate to say that when it's a 3 and a 2.5. We're all ingrained to know what the key numbers are, but I still think BC is worth the price.
Scott, I love what you just pointed out there, and it's a great, great point. That's why college football teasers, Patrick, are a bad play. One other thing I would add, if you're going to follow Scott on this play and you're at 2.5 right now, I would take BC on the money line plus the 125. I think this is a tough game to call, but I think there's just as equal, if not a better opportunity for BC to win this game than it is for them to lose by four or more.
Okay. Great information. It sounds like you and Big Al McGordy getting together, or Scott.
You got it. Big Al McGordy with that big database.
That's what it sounds like to me. All right, boys, let's do this. And we'll run the board. Rotation number, again, Scott, doesn't have to be an official play. And he's got a couple other plays. We'll send those over for the picks page as well as far as college football. Just a lean and a thought process on these games, NFL board. 451, Miami at Kansas City, Frankfurt, Germany, Kansas City right now, Scott, is 2, and the total is 50.
You know, Miami's offense, guys, has been about speed, and then they expand, you know, downfield, expand teams downfield. It opens things up over the middle of the field. I'm not the only one that's talked about this week. Great Cosell, a great NFL mind, has brought that up. But now they're facing speedy defenses. Tua and the company have not been so hot against speedy defenses. They scored 17 in that 14-point loss to the Eagles. They scored 20 in a 28-point loss to Buffalo. The offense was completely shut down by the Eagles, and in those two games, Tua, he's got 2 touchdown passes and 2 picks, and he was sacked 8 times. And the one thing about KC, man, they own the quickness on defense to really disrupt Tua's timing and rhythm offense. And I think offensively for KC, they get back to their fundamentals. And you're talking about a Miami defense that gives up over 24 points a game. I think KC bounces right back from last week's loss and gets the win here by 7 to 10 points.
I love this play here, Patrick, in this particular spot. You mentioned Kansas City coming off the loss, but when you look at the Miami Dolphins, guys, this is a team that has been beating up on weaker opponents. A couple opportunities they've had to play teams that are competent, Buffalo and Philadelphia, they've gotten their doors blown off. And this is a similar situation. Now you've got a team in a bad spot. I like Kansas City to bounce back here.
Of the units on the field, the Chiefs' defensive front and the defense as a whole is the key to the whole game. They're going to make an impact. I like the Chiefs in the first half, minus half point.
Total sweep. I totally agree. It's a perfect spot for the Chiefs. The travel does worry me a little bit with them getting there in a tardy fashion, but I agree with you, the three of you. 4-5-3, Minnesota at Atlanta. It is Hall starting for Minnesota. Scott Heinicke under center for Atlanta. It's 4 with Atlanta laying at 37.5 on the total.
Yeah, I like to give credit where it's due. The Action Network pointed out that the last 18 times a quarterback has made his first NFL start on the road, those teams went 3-15 straight up. And, of course, you're talking about the Vikings and Jalen Hall. The pass defense is bad. They allow teams to complete about a 70% completion rate, by the way, of late. Offensively, they don't run the ball when it matters most. But the thing about the Falcons, they're tough to back. They've covered 1 of 7. And here's the thing. Atlanta's banged up on defense. And, you know, Hall posted terrific numbers of Brigham Young through the year. He also showed that he can use his feet, guys. He escaped pressure when he needed to at BYU. Atlanta, very conservative on offense. So having said what I did about the 3-15 thing, I still think the Vikings plus the points. They're an opinion, but I still have an opinion on the Vikings plus the points rather than laying it with the Falcons.
I'm going to stay away from this game, Patrick. Hard to call, but the number's coming down now. 3.5 in favor of Atlanta here. Quarterback play is going to what this game boils down to.
I kind of like Falcons in the first half, minus 2.5, but I love Mac Hollins over his receiving yards total, 16.5. Gone over that 6-7 games this year. Better quarterback, no Drake London.
One word, YOLO. Taylor Heinicke. I'm going to fade the steam, okay? I know we're going away from the 4 down to 3.5, like Amal said. All's a disaster. The Falcons are going to be completely taken over by the Heinicke Hive. Give me the Falcons at home, a dispirited Vikings team after losing Dustin Swedelson's MVP and Kirk Cousins. We come back, continue running the board with Scott Spritzer next.